Mornings on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Wednesday, May 24th, and this is Game On. Well, should under-12s be allowed to play competitive GAA games? That is the question dominating lots of discussions online today. We'll talk to Shane Smith about it. The Ireland under-17 star continues to rise. Paul Corrie and Tony O'Donoghue tell us about the team and what lies ahead. Plus, Nadine Doherty is with us to look ahead to the Ladies Football Provincial Finals. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Now, welcome along. I am delighted to say that Nadine Doherty and Paul Corrie are with me in studio. How are you guys? Paul, I haven't seen you since Sheffield Wednesday qualified for the League One playoff final.
Yeah, it was the most ridiculous game of football, wasn't
it? Your former club, I should add.
Yeah, absolutely. I was delighted to see it. I mean, if there was a stadium in League One where you thought the atmosphere might be able to get behind the team and carry the team over the line, it was going to be Hillsborough. And you saw the scenes after the game. And it just had everything. In particular, kind of really glad for Liam Palmer. He was there when I was there. He scored the equaliser in the last minute. He's a Sheffield Wednesday fan through and through. He's been at the club his whole life. So really nice to see him get the late equaliser. But they'll have a stiff test to Yorkshire Derby against Barnsley in Wembley, sold out.
Very good.
I mean,
what level were they at when you were there?
Championship.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're in the Championship. They'd just been promoted, and they got badly knocked last year because they really went for it, I guess, when the new owners, Chan Siri, came in, and they started, I guess, dishing out big contracts, and then got hit for financial fair play last year and ended up getting relegated back down to League One. But an absolutely massive club, Marie, probably one that belongs back in the upper echelons of English football. So hopefully, fingers crossed, they get out of League One and back into the Championship.
Very good. Nadine, how are you?
Yeah, great. Very good.
Keeping well?
Keeping well, yeah.
Good, good. Looking forward to the Championship ahead. We'll be getting into this weekend's action shortly. We're going to talk about something now that has been dominating a lot of discussions online today. So an article appeared in the Irish News. Cara O'Kane wrote it that Croke Park are set to clamp down and bring sanctions against those involved in providing any form of competition for players under the age of 12. So the association reminded counties that there is no facility under association rule for any competitive aspect within these games. It added that any or all of the keeping, recording or publishing of scores, competitions, blitzes or events that involve knockout stages and or issuing of winners or runner-up medals, trophies, awards or prizes. So the Irish News saw this email and printed the details online. It was posted by Cara O'Kane, and then a lot of discussion opinion followed. It's been kind of split, divisive. People have different opinions on it. It's quite emotive. People have good experiences, bad experiences, but it's been a great conversation, and it's been really interesting following the discussion online. So we decided to take it to the programme today. And I am delighted to say that Shane Smith, coach with Kilmacud Crokes, former GDO, primary school teacher, and lots of other accolades to his name, joins us now on the line. How are you, Shane?
Hello, Amory. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. You're probably off to a match in a while, are you?
Yeah, the usual evening time training and matches. It's a great place to be, yeah.
So it's been interesting following this today, Shane. And just first of all, why do you think so many people have moved to comment on these issues that were raised today by the Irish News?
Yeah, I was like so many others, I was reading some of the comments there this morning, and I actually just think that we need to press the pause button a little bit and need to develop a sense of perspective around why children are playing sport. If we follow the education, follow the research as to why they play, we know they play sport to have fun, to with their friends, and to improve at a task. We're not finding too much research to say that children motivate sport to win. So if we kind of follow what the children are looking for in terms of improving at a task, getting better at that solo, getting better at that jab lift, getting better at that kick pass, I think we can find lots of successes within that. Getting there, though, is obviously quite challenging. I think we need to continue to educate our coaches, educate our parents as to why children play sport, and then hopefully that will have a positive knock-on effect. And let's not forget the goal game model when it was introduced, Marie. The goal game is exactly what it sounds like. Everybody gets a go. Mm-hmm. So when you remove the scores, the league tables, it's kind of a bit more of a relaxed environment for everybody to allow the kids to flourish in that environment, and that's what it was brought in for in around the 2000s, to maximise that level of fair play, of achievement, and kind of take away from the winning at all cost mentality.
And why now do you think that there seems to have been, and it was quite a negative reaction to the lack of competition for the under-12s, or the negativity surrounding this article today and what it entailed?
Well, I don't know why there's so much negativity, but I do think it's really important how we present competition and how it's presented, in that it is not a win at all cost, but how it's presented for each child to develop at their particular level and their particular age group. I mean, some of the research around when they were introduced was from DCU with Niall Moyne and Mickey Whelan, and they tracked like 7 players in 7-a-side matches and in 15-a-side matches, and what they saw was a huge difference in their opportunity to make decisions, in their ball contact, in their inclusion, in their involvement. So that's what brought in the Go Game model, and it has been a success, and we have seen so many children playing Gaelic games in that environment. And again, I know it's a non-competitive environment, the results are not kept, the league helps are not kept, but that does not always mean that the children are not motivated to be competitive. With children, I mean, we're all naturally competitive to do our best intrinsically, not so much striving towards winning at all costs at the underage level.
Now, on this programme, I talk to sports people and athletes all the time. So they've obviously came through elite pathways along the way at some stage. Paul Corry, you would have came through, I'd imagine anyway, the Dublin schoolboy set up when international teams, trials, all that sort of stuff. What's your thoughts on this, I guess? Okay, Go Games are there, but it just feels like it's a bit of a step further now with blitzes and competitions and clamping down on anything competitive, knockout, no finals, no winners, no losers, a little bit further than Go Games.
Yeah, firstly, I understand the concept of Go Games and up to a certain degree and up to a certain age group, but I think if you're, at least from a football and a soccer's point of view, I think under 12s being non-competitive is a bit of a stretch for me. I think naturally enough, when you think about soccer and you think about the landscape and the number of people who are playing this game and how competitive it's becoming in order for kids to actually strive to have a career in this game, and if you're going to compete and compare yourselves against the likes of the UK and the academy system that they have, it's called the ePPP, the Elite Player Performance Programme. They are engaging in competitive football between the ages of 9 and 11. Now, it's in a controlled manner and it's not exactly a league format or anything like that, but they do have, just reading here, they have power play tournaments, they have in and out of balance festivals, they have under 11 Premier League regional series, they have international tournaments, they have welcome festivals. So it's in a controlled environment, but the kids are being exposed to competitive football. And I just think if we were to take that sort of mentality into soccer within this country, there's a part of me that would feel that we'd be left behind to an extent during those years of development. And if you think about the challenge that we face already with facilities and coaches and the environments that our kids are playing in, I don't think that would be, for me at least, a beneficial step to take from that age group anyway. The younger ages, I fully understand, Marie, but I think for me, under 11s and under 12s is a healthy age group for competitive football to start.
Nadine, you're a teacher as well and have came from an elite sporting background yourself. What are your thoughts on it, even just from the female perspective as well?
Yeah, I mean, the Go Games is fantastic and I agree with what everybody has said so far, but I do agree with Paul there. I think 11 or 12, you have to cater for the kids who are competitive, because let's be honest, we're talking here about, you know, kids like going out and enjoying the game. There are competitive kids and I don't think they're fully catered for, you know, in the model as is. I don't think there's any harm in striking a balance with blitzes, local blitzes, county blitzes, going down to another club. I think a big factor in all of this too, Marie, are parents.
They're the elephant in the room, really.
They're the elephant in the room, yeah. And that's from a teaching point of view as well. Coaches, and I think we have to do more around that education piece. You know, the LGFA have that Take a Second campaign, which is actually very good. The J1 have one similar. But I think clubs really have to look at their ethos. You know, is it a case that they are going to really stick by this Go Games model, and it's going to be about, you know, giving the kids a game without that competitive nature, developing skills? Or are they going to actually stand up and say, yeah, we are going to win here at all costs? Because that is happening in some clubs, you know, and we don't hear about that. I just think striking the balance is, it's massive, but it's catering for those kids as well, I think, at 10, 11, 12. And also you look at, these kids are preparing to go to secondary school. It's straight away competitive in there.
Yeah.
You know, coming to Munn School is competitive. So, you know, they're playing GA and coming to Munn School. It's competitive in some aspects. And then they go to the club and there's no score being kept. So I just think a balance is key for all of those kids, you know, the kids who are playing just to have fun, develop skills, and then the kids who are really competitive because they're out there. And if you don't cater for them, you probably will lose them to other sports. That is, because when they hit 12, they're deciding on their sport.
Yeah.
You know,
anyone who wants to get in touch, please do text us on 51552. We've had so many comments online about this, and we will put them to the panel that we have here today as well. Shane, I just want to pick up on Nadine's point there, and look, that's just something that I'm noticing myself, anecdotally, that there are kids now who are really into the competitive side of it, and look, maybe they have developed a little bit earlier, maybe they started playing a little bit earlier, and they are drifting away from Gaelic games, because in Dublin especially, elite soccer, Saturday Premier Soccer, Saturday Red, whatever you're calling it, goes head to head with GAA. So if a kid is very competitive, should there be a concern within the GAA that they might drift towards a competitive environment and then be lost to the GAA?
Well, like, you know, some kids are more competitive than others. Some kids are more driven than others. But that fluctuates with different age groups. We should never forget our late developers. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're writing off children 11, 12 years of age and saying, no, they're not good enough. I mean, what about the late developer who maybe comes on a little bit when they're 15 or 16 because they've had a really good coaching environment around them and they've got opportunity to flourish and develop in a positive coaching environment where winning was not the most important outcome. So we must cater for all our children and not exclude anybody. Like, when we look at the research around why children are leading sport as well, particularly in the teenage years, it's interesting. There's a massive drop-off within the teenagers, as we know. Mm-hmm. And the reasons are varied and they're obviously complex, but some reasons include there's a change of coach, there's a change of coaching philosophy, and competition is emphasised. And that's where we're losing so many children, when over competition is emphasised and when winning is emphasised. And children struggle in that environment, not all children, but some children struggle in that environment. And my point is that if we keep as many as possible for as long as possible in a positive coaching environment, especially at younger ages, where retention means far much more than winning, we are meeting the needs of the child. And retention could also be viewed as success, because the research tells us when it gets too competitive, too young, we see the drop-off, and that's evidence across sports.
Shane, if you are talking about catering for everybody's needs, are the goal games catering for the needs of the competitive child then?
Goal games are streamed, Marie. The advice on the goal games is to stream the games. Under 8, it's not streaming, but from under 9 up, the recommendation is to stream children. So we are seeing, I don't know, if you've got 20 children, you've got 2 pounds of 10. So children are being competitive and competing against children of the same level. So whether that child is playing in, let's for example, in Division 1 against other teams in Division 1, that's their level. And a child could play in Division 3 or 4. The recommendations are that we pit children with other children of their level. And I suppose the question remains with children in sport, where is the child happiest? Where will the child get the most from sport? Will a child get the most from sport by playing against children of their own level and maximising their ball contact and developing confidence that way? So I think in many ways we're already catering with the model we have in streaming and allowing each child to play at their level.
Yeah, Shane, and I agree 100%. I think it's just a spectrum really in terms of the skills and the interests of the kids. But I think something you touched on there, and we've already touched on it, it's the positive coaching environment. Because no matter what you have in place, be it go games or be it fully competitive, if the coaching environment and the club environment isn't correct, then no matter how good or how weak any child is, they're going to drop off. And just in terms of blitzes, I mean, there's a good way of running a blitz and there's a terrible way of running a blitz. I mean, I take a soccer team, my girls' soccer team in my school. It's not Gaelic, but it's soccer. And we play a league. We play in the FAI League. We play in the FAI Cup. all they want to do is go to the local Blitz. That's all they want.
They love it.
They absolutely love it. And I mean, we keep scores. There's now they'll ask the score if they know they've won, but you know, it's they just love that environment because it's really positive, it's competitive, and it caters for all of them. So I just think it's balance.
My local school, the girls today, they qualified in the coming months ago to go to Croke Park, and
amazing.
That reward. Oh. They are absolutely thrilled that they're going to be heading off to Croke Park. And sometimes it's nice to have that little bit of carrot. And we talk about how difficult it is to keep kids engaged and to keep them wanting to play. I'm sure that. A lot of them might not be at the level of the ones at the top, but they're all getting their chance to go to Croke Park. And if they didn't win the match today, they wouldn't be going, Shane.
Yeah, well, exactly. And like, as you touched on, so much goes back to the club culture, the club philosophy, and what the club stands for. And like, unless you define as a club or you coach, new coaches or new parents will define it for you. So having a clear philosophy and a clear cultural and a clear coaching pathway in the club really helps new coaches that come in to say, no, this is what we think works best for us, so here's the template that we work off. And then you've got everyone singing off the same hymn sheet, and it's got a consistency, so expectations are consistent. And again, like, if we want to improve our players, we have to keep improving our coaches. Mm-hmm. And coach education is so important in order to retain children in sport and to meet all their needs across the board, regardless of ability.
So Shane, on that, do you think that perhaps the GA, instead of focusing on, you know, coming down with sanctions on clubs or counties who organise a little blitz at under 12, should they focus on that education piece then with coaches and parents? Like, I think parents are huge, because you could have a really positive coach who is doing all the right things, and then they get massive pressure from an element of parents and the whole thing falls apart. So maybe a pivot from the GA on that front, as opposed to, as I said, sanctioning, you know, the teams
secret
or clubs.
Blitzes going on around the country.
Yeah, you know, maybe that is somewhere that they could put a bit more into. And I'm sure they do.
There's
great work.
Because you've got the GDO background. Like, is coaching education improving? Are more people engaging with it? Do people understand the value of it? And just, like, is there more of an uptake now? Are you seeing?
Oh, I think we've a brilliant coach education system. I think it's rolled out. But unfortunately, like you mentioned, emotions at the earlier on. Like, I mean, emotions often take over on the sideline in that match. And that is so evident across parks, the length and breadth of the country. And I think adults need to step back and take a breath and get a sense of perspective around sport. Because for the children, you know, whilst winning is nice, it's not a must for so many children. Adults need to just take a little step back, take a breath, and realise that, you know, for children, for example, win or lose, they're going to school tomorrow, you know, and to understand that their motives around sport is not to win every time they play. Their motives are to go out there and have fun and improve at that particular task and get better at that particular skill. And that's that intrinsic motivation piece that children have. I want to get better at this to me and improve my skills. And we've often seen children playing matches and we know the score, be it won or lost, but they're happy because they may have got three blocks in, they may have got three catches, they may have scored two goals, or they might have got a tackle, or they might have been trying to improve a certain skill set. And we can catch children doing well in so many ways other than the question, what was the score? Did you win? And did you score?
I'm just going to pick you up on something there. And you know, you said that whether they win or lose, they go to school the next day. But isn't that a good lesson to learn, though, that if you do lose or things don't go your way, that you are going to go to school the next day? Because we talk about trying to build up resilience for our children. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult to expose them to anything challenging these days. We have, and me included, we're now kind of in the habit of protecting them from everything that we can. But, you know, if they learn that losing is a setback and you get over it and you go back to school the next day, like, surely there's a bit of a value in that as well, Shane.
Absolutely. I mean, I say to children that I coach, and my own children, I think a measure of success is, did you do your best? And if a child did their best, I think that's more than good enough. We can't just value success by winning medals and trophies, because if we do, we're setting children up for failure. I mean, there's 10 teams in the league. One wins it, and nine failures. Of course they're not. They've had a wonderful season. They've developed the skills, developed friendships, enjoyed going training. Just because they didn't win, it does not mean that it's not a success, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's adults imposing adult coaching philosophies on children too young is the education piece. And that's where we're at the moment, continuing as clubs to educate our parents and the coaches of what we stand for. And that will then enhance the playing experience for children.
loads of texts coming in, and just interestingly, they're mostly about the coaches and the negativity that comes with when a coach isn't on the right page or isn't encouraging the kids. Hi all, my daughter plays football in Camogie. She's now 16, got a new coach for football and now hates the coach, too strict, etc., and does not want to play anymore, and she has played county level in the past. Another text, I'm a sports psychologist in Ireland for 5 years now. Kids want a fun environment at all stages. That's absolutely true. It's the parents that are making this an over-competitive world for these young kids, criticising coaches, players and other parents. A psychoeducation piece is needed with the parents. Another text, it's the coaches and backroom staff who have to win again. It's always been there. It's the coaches and managers who need to change their mentality. It's about competing and having fun. Managers have to win. They push the underage teams. It's not the kids playing, but managers are pushing underage teams to win. Paul, I can see you there.
Yeah, no, like kids will naturally fall out of sports, maybe because they don't like it or they don't want to be there. Not everybody's going to stay in sport for their whole life. Is that solely down to the sport being competitive?
I don't think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, often in the GA you have children put into nursery because their parents are just GA mad, and that's what
they grew up with. Want to go get a coffee.
maybe. But you know, like that's what they grew up with. Or you might have, you know, people moving into a community and the GA club is the hub of the community, so they throw the kids in. And maybe the kids just don't like football or Camogie or hurling.
That as well,
and that, as you said, like that happens. And I think, you know, I feel that we're being really harsh here on coaches. There are so many unbelievable and brilliant coaches out there who are so passionate about it and so positive. Unfortunately, like anything, it's the small element that often gets the most volume that we're highlighting here. But, you know, there are amazing people out there, and they're volunteers as well. You know, they are the majority, but unfortunately it is the minority that, you know, there's that text, that daughter playing football, and, you know, that's a minority.
And Shane, you'll know, like, most of the coaches are brilliant. Like, let's be fair, most of them are. And then there's a few that go over the top, but a coach should be able to create a fun, engaging environment where they can encourage the kids who want to be a bit competitive, encourage the ones that are maybe on the fringes a little bit. But by taking away all of the competition, it's very hard, I feel, to cater for the needs of every single kid. I heard of a club recently, and they were supposed to head to a blitz, and they picked 20 kids. It's one of those big huge super clubs, and a parent complained because their kid didn't get picked, and then no kid could go. They pulled the whole team. So, like, when you have Go Games and you have streaming already, surely you would think that it's okay every now and again to just go and try and play a competition. But it just seems like we're going too far the other way now, where we're not exposing them to anything that might be a little bit challenging.
Some of the greatest tips from, I mean, some of the coaching out there is superb, and sometimes we lose sight of that as well, that there is 99% brilliant coaching out there, child-centred philosophies. And even I remember being younger and going on trips to play matches in different counties, and there was huge excitement with that, you know? And most enjoyable days were had are getting on a bus and going playing in challenge matches in different counties. So, yeah, that in itself can develop so much in a child who's going somewhere else playing different players. So when we bring in the we're playing for a cup, we're playing for medals, we're playing for trophies, that seems to be what the jury are talking about today.
Yeah, but it's competition though, like knockout, like that's the competitive element, whether we like it or not. It's just, if you're going to win a trophy, you have to, some teams have to lose along the way, and I just don't think that's a bad thing every now and again. And like, I've been educated myself on it today because so many people have been getting in touch, and it's been called developmental competition, and a lot of the experts saying it's okay to introduce that sporadically, to have certain times of the year when you're going to do something competitive to try and develop that competitive streak in kids. Because as you said, Nadine, you come out then and you're 13 and all of a sudden you're supposed to be able to know how to go and try and win a game.
Yeah, not only to try and win a game, just to come to terms with a competitive environment. And you'd hope at under 13 and under 14 level, for the majority of children, it's not, you know, that intense. But it is a shock to the system for a lot of them, because as I said, they have it in school, they have it with the clubs. You might have kids then on development squads, so it can be very overwhelming. And just on the piece of, you know, a trophy or a few medals, I mean, I just think too often now we give out medals, everybody gets a medal for everything, and it's, you're kind of looking at it then, what value is placed on that, you know? And I was listening to a podcast during the week, and one of our most amazing footballers ever, Michael Darren McCauley, and they spoke about him on the podcast that, like, okay, he was massively competitive for Dublin, so on, but there was another element to him where he just loved sport, that he would have just gone out and played his basketball, whatever it was. So the balance was struck there, whatever was happening in Ballyboden or wherever he's from. So yeah, I just think at that age, Marie, just a little bit, just gradually, something I think is the right balance, because otherwise I feel, and that's as a teacher as well, the resilience is very, very hard to build in then at that age.
Yeah, because you're wanting to,
and so much comes, so I'm sure so much does come from the coach. So much does come from the coach, and like how we speak generally determines how children listen, and our positive language and our positive reinforcement and catching them doing well, and that's the retention piece, and how we speak has a huge impact on how they listen, how they perform, and we should never lose sight of that, I don't think, as coaches. Our body language, our feedback and our positivity will retain them, and you create a positive coaching environment, children will come back, and if children come back, they will naturally improve on the skill set.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shane, this one I'm going to put to you. I'm a parent coach as well, but I know you're further down the line than I am, but one texter says they think that part of the problem is parents as coaches. They shouldn't be there if their child is playing. But then how do we have enough coaches who aren't parents? What do you think?
Well, we're indebted to parents who are taking teams if nobody else will, for starters, because there's not everyone jumping to take a team. So we're indebted to so many parents who take the team. For generally the right reason, I think it's quite subjective to suggest that no parent should be with a team the child's playing on. I mean, every parent is different, every coach is different, and everyone has different coaching philosophies. And 99% of the parents that take a team do so with the best of intentions. The strength of any coaching team, any coaching squad, is to empower new parents and bring new parents in with you and get the paperwork done and bring new parents in with you and create an environment where you have not just two or three coaches, but six or seven parents and coaches, where you can share the load, bounce ideas off each other, and give the children the best platform for training.
My daughter plays under 14 and loves it and loves training, but doesn't get a lot of time playing a match. She gets very disheartened and feels like she's not good enough to be played, as they pick the same kids every game. I hate hearing that. I do think at all underage level that you should get equal game time, that everybody should be getting on at some stage. Then another one, all sport by nature is competitive, goal games or not. I've heard 8 kids or 9 coming off the pitch saying, 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds saying, I scored 2-2. What did you score? They know who has won. Paul, I'd say that was you, was it? I scored 2 goals in the DDS final.
Yeah, listen, I think, Anna Marie, like, it seems like the change has almost been brought in to actually alter the adults and the adults and their, I guess, thinking around games and how they communicate around games. I did a bit of coaching. I never had any problem with any child, but often you would have a problem with the parent and how they're actually communicating, or the pressures that they're putting on their child or some of the other children within the team. I think kids who want to be there will always give it their all, whether they, you know, we won, lost or draw, got something out of the game, whether it be kind of the development in their own game or whether just the enjoyment of being there. My experience has been that the change and the education, the majority of the time, needs to be with the parent.
Yeah, agree. Somebody made the point that I am speaking as the mother of very competitive children. That is not the case. Not all of my children are competitive. They're very different.
There needs to be a place for the competitive children as well. I played at a competitive age group, probably similar to your own son, in the DDSL, the top league, with the representative squads. And I wanted to be there because I wanted to pit myself against the better players. And my game, as a result, came on. If you pit me against kids who were of a different level, and I'm not just using myself, but kids who have an element of talent, they're not going to progress and they're probably not going to get as much enjoyment out of it. So yes, there's a balance for all sorts, but it's not a case that, you know, you can hold the competitive ones back or the talented ones back because we want to ensure that it's you know, it ticks everybody's box, I guess.
And just like some horror stories as well, like a texter has said that she attended a JAA defensive blitz lately and was very upset to hear another parent loudly and negatively commenting on their son's standard of playing, loudly enough for all the other kids to hear. Luckily enough, her son didn't hear
And she went and asked that parent to stop comments like that, stop kids of the age from sticking with the club and becoming engaged members. If her son had heard, she knows that he would have reconsidered being involved in the club. Look, that's terrible, and no club should even put up with that. And if anybody here is bad behaviour, I would say call it out, go to the coach, go to the club. My son's under 11 soccer team changed coach, and the new coach is also a parent. Win at all costs. My son was one of the boys told he was no longer needed while other boys were brought in from other clubs. Now 15, has not engaged in a team sport since. There's nothing wrong with trying to win, but it cannot be at the expense of supporting participation. Completely agree with that. You would hope that there is a team for everybody, that every child, teenager finds their level. And again, like, I would look at the ethos of the club. If they can't accommodate every single kid, they should be able to. Otherwise, they shouldn't be taking membership from kids that they can't accommodate. Shane, you're probably going to get the sack now as your coach, because I know you have a match.
Yes, I have a match, yes.
I'll leave the last word to you, Shane. Look, just kids sport, do you feel like it's in a healthy place, and do you think that there's a place for a competition for children under 12?
I think children are naturally competitive, and if you give them a platform to be competitive, they'll do their best. It's identifying that competition is not just about winning a medal or winning a trophy. Competition for each child is being viewed as that child doing their individual best. And I think that is success for any child that plays sport. Do your absolute best.
Okay, well, I hope your team do their absolute best tonight. Shane Smith, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. And just another couple of texts I want to get to as well. This texter wants to put across another point of view. We had a group of coaches in our club who had a team from under 7, took them to under 9. They were very strong on the fun element of training, but never concentrated on the core skills. And then when this group got to under 10, under 11, they were left incredibly frustrated as they were unable to carry out the basics. You need to make training and games fun, but ultimately you're there to coach the kids. If you send your child to swimming lessons, you expect them to be taught how to swim. I firmly agree with that. I think that if a coach is taking on the role, that they have to be able to develop the skills, because every other club around the country, whatever sport, is developing skills. They're part of the game. If you're playing hurling and instead of learning how to rise the ball or strike it, you're doing tug of war all the time, you're going to come out into competitive level and not be able to compete. And I think one way to retain kids in sport is teaching the skills of the game, so that when they're able to play it, that they'll enjoy it because they're able to play it. Nadine, what do you think?
Yeah, and there's fun ways of teaching skills as well, you know. But that's what Go Games is about. That's the basics of it. It's the basic skills. Mm-hmm. So that has to be your number one piece, and getting the fun element in there. And then, yeah, I'm just looking at this last text here. that's me.
My daughter
is the
most competitive person I know. If she loses that Monopoly, she'll freak out. But now she's on every county team that she's eligible for. And look, those kids have to be catered for as well. Absolutely. Retention, participation, all that is important, but we can't forget about the kids who want that little bit of extra competitiveness that they are out practicing all of the time. There has to be a place for them as well. Guys, great discussion. I'm going to leave it. I'll keep an eye on the text as they come in, because there has been a huge reaction to this all day long. It's been great, and I think it's great even just Paul to have the discussion as well, so that we can explore different ideas, see different perspectives, hear other voices, and just get different views on things.
I think what you said there about developing the skills, mm-hmm. In order to play that sport is very important, because that's what it is about. And for me, results is a benchmark of how those skills are actually being developed. It used to frustrate me back in kind of DDSL days, where you'd see maybe people winning in a certain way, but that was at the expense of developing a child. It was almost like the bigger children always won, because we'd be really direct, and you would get away from the fundamentals of the game, and people would be caught up as you go along. But for me, if you develop the skills in the right way with the right people,
in the right environment,
that is your recipe for success. I don't think the end result is always going to be what's going to either progress or not progress the development of the child.
Okay, Nadine, anything to add?
No, you just hit it on the head there. And I mean, you look at successful clubs around the country, and today lots of different pieces came out about, like, Nemo, for example. Yeah. You know, little to no success at the very young age. And then.
But the one thing about Nemo, though, is that they have a great tradition and culture there. And
it's
they have fantastic coaches there. And there's a great there's a great coaching culture there and giving back. So while they might not have the success, you can be sure they are developing the skills. They know how to play the Nemo way, and they ethos is what my producer says to me. And likewise with Curfin and Galway are another one, and you see them, and I've seen videos of them online, and they're teaching the kids from academy out to play the Curfin way, so that when they do get to that competitive environment, they know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and I'd say, and I'd imagine there's a huge amount of trust in those coaches mm-hmm. from the parents' side in those clubs, and I think trust is a massive thing. But yeah, listen, ethos and culture, and you know what Shane hit on there as well, and I think it's really important, and I know this as a teacher, and I think all coaches, no matter, you know, how competitive you are or what your train of thought is, our words have a huge impact on children. And you mightn't think it. It might be one thing that you say to a child. It could have a huge, huge impact for years. So I think any coach that's listening, it's a massive thing. So just be very careful what you say to young children, because they remember, you know, be it positive or negative. So try and keep it the positive.
Okay, guys, we're going to take a break. Stay with us, though. I want to talk about the Ireland Under-17s and the Ladies Football Provincial Championships.
Game on.
Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to ladies football. It is provincial final Sunday. We're calling it Ian Doherty, are we?
Yes, yes, may as well. It's here, yeah.
One is done and dusted. Connacht is done.
Yeah. Mayo finally beaten Galway for the first time since 2016, I think, Marie, wasn't it? Yeah, big statement for Mayo, I felt, and worrying enough for Galway. We always speak about this every year, you know, the big push in the league, and then you worry for them come championship. But listen, they'll have another month, I think, to regroup. They'll be in a tricky enough group once as being runners up. But, you know, while Mayo only beat Donegal in that league, and they were poor enough at times, I just would have felt with them, you could see there was trust in the players in what Moyles was trying to do. I think he played over 35 players. So I think they'll have a say in the championship, I feel.
Okay, so Armagh Donegal, own bag at 3:30 on Sunday. I'm just going to say this line and move on. We're not even going to discuss it. So the final was booked in Clonus since March 16th, but it's been moved due to a men's club game, the Clonus Seniors in the Monaghan Championship. Really disappointing. It's done though. There's nothing that we can do. Same old story, even though it had been booked in for months. Let's talk about Armagh though, going for 4 Ulster Championships in a row. Remember last year's Donegal game, and it was an absolute cracker, went to extra time. They're huge favourites, I'd say.
Yeah, massive, Marie. They've been unchallenged so far. Donegal got a good start in them in the round robin game, but Armagh absolutely took over. Amy Mackin took over, and I know we speak about her every week, but she scored 4-10 in 2 games, Marie, and I think
that's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
It?
Like, and what did she score? 3-5 in the league final.
She got a hat-trick,
3-3 maybe. She is the form forward anyway, if not the foreign player. So look, they're huge favourites. Look, they like to kick the ball direct and get support from runners, so I feel for Donegal it might be a bit of damage limitation. They'll bring a huge number of players back. I don't know the pitch in Own Beg. I'm presuming it's going to be smaller than Clonus, which I think Donegal might be happy enough about. What Armagh did in the past when they play Donegal, they bring Amy Mackin out to the middle for spells, if it is a bit condensed inside. So they might do that. But listen, it's very, very hard to see past Armagh. I mean, you know.
Yeah, just given their form. In Munster, Cork and Kerry, Cork won this last year. They have home advantage in this game. But Kerry, just given how good they looked in April, are they still out ahead, or have the other teams closed the gap?
I think the teams have closed the gap a little bit. Now, it's hard to tell when it's just Munster, but I mean, in that round robin game, as you said, like, Cork scored 2-4 in the last 10 minutes. So it's a bit of a shake up, I'd imagine, for Kerry. I think this is going to be a big psychological test for Kerry, because I would have felt last year they were the form team coming into the Munster final as well. And Cork got the better of them. And I think if they lose another Munster final, then little doubts might start creeping in. And I feel they do want that 100% record if they are to win this All-Ireland. They haven't been overly impressive. What I would worry for them a little bit is Louise Navarro-Hertig hasn't been playing well by her standards. Yeah. She's been very quiet. She didn't score in the last round. And I'd wonder, possibly, have Kerry, maybe they're tapering their training to peak for that the round robin. their strongest 15, I feel, is important, and I would have identified that corner forward position in the past. It's kind of up for grabs, and I feel, for me, Hannah O'Donoghue is probably the best person to fill that, so I would expect her to start. Defensively, they have to get it right, Marie. Like, they were really, remember we spoke about the league, like, they were tigerish. They were really, yeah. I mean, it was 1 to 15, hands on deck. That has kind of dropped off a little bit, along with their conversion rate. But looking at Cork, I think they'll have a bit of a sweeper system in place, because those Kerry runners, I mean, they're so dynamic. Once they start kicking that ball and they get runners from the wings. So I think Cork will have to do something to counteract that. And again, no more than Kerry, it's Cork's strongest 15. I mean, is Derek Heidi going to be in there? Are the Camogie girls going to be in there? You know, they are going to have to get that right. And I think confidence in Cork, unexpectedly, is quietly rising. But listen, I think key areas, if Kerry get that running game right, I think they'll be very, very dangerous. And listen, the Cork attack, like, it has been unbelievable in the league, and the two O'Sullivans are back now. But my only worry there is, if things aren't going well for Cork, they'll kind of revert to type, and we'll see the O'Sullivans maybe trying to run the ball, and I would feel Kerry will just squeeze in and suck the life out of them. Very hard to call.
What about the Dublin Meath game? Is that as hard to call?
If you're going on form, you probably have to go with Dublin. But I mean, we keep saying it, like, Meath have to have a game in them. Mm. And if this isn't it to ignite their championship, I'm not sure. I suppose with Dublin, looking at their last round against Laois, they played 30 players and still won by 25 points. So they are going really well. I think with Meath as well, a big concern for them is Aiveen Cleary. She looked quite badly injured in the last round, and I think if she isn't playing for them, that's a huge, huge loss. Look, their intensity just needs to go up, Marie, and I think they need to turn possession into conversion. They have only scored 3 goals in 9 games. And I mean, that's not gonna win you a Leinster Championship.
That's for sure.
They're averaging about 10 points. So that really has to change them. And listen, we're waiting for it all to click, but I don't know, Dublin, look, they'll play that direct running game. I think they're confident that they've figured out that Meath defensive 14 people behind the ball system. It's not the best Dublin team over the last 10 years, but it's amazing what intensity an organisation can do, and I think Mick Bohan has that going really well. And one last thing on that game, I just think with those two teams, we all know the big name players, and I know it's a bit of a cliche, but I don't think it's going to be a new player or players who's going to be the star or stars of this game. I think it's going to be the old reliables. So whoever's old reliables show up on the day, that's going to be the...
And Dublin also aiming for their 10th Leinster Championship in a row, which is a nice little motivator.
It is.
Okay, Nadine, we're going to take a break. Stay with us, though. We're going to turn our attention to the Ireland under-17s and be chatting to Tony O'Donoghue and Paul Carey very shortly.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. I am delighted to say that Paul Carey is still here, and we are going to talk about the Ireland under-17s, who now know they are playing Spain in their quarterfinal of the Euros. Paul, you watched them last night in action and no doubt were hugely impressed.
Oh, they were fantastic, Marie, and I think we were all probably a little worried after the Polish game when we were beaten 5-1 that it might become a bit of an uphill battle, but I think they've bounced back really well. The Wales performance was obviously mildly impressive, but again last night against Hungary, like, it's not so much the results, and we're talking about competitive football, it's the manner of how they're going about it, Marie. You know, naturally enough, we probably think of Irish sides being difficult to beat, sitting in, low block, make it hard and counter-attack. This is much the opposite. They very much mix their game up, they play out through the back, they're more than happy to go up to Mason Melia, and they just have a lovely blend and a mix to their game, and some really outstanding individuals as well. And last night was a superb performance. I mean, naturally enough, Melia will kind of grab the headlines. He's playing a year up, like, he's eligible for this tournament again next year. And
7 players from this team are playing a year or two above their own age group. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And the two who have really stood out for me are Melia and Arazi, and they are both eligible for next year's competition. His goals were brilliant. He has a really good build. He's quite tall and big, able to hold the ball up, but also similar, I don't want to make comparison to Evan Ferguson, but he's able to run in behind as well. And, you know, he's taken his goals really well throughout the competition. So it's going to be really interesting, particularly with him. He's currently at St. Pat's. I am sure that there's a number of clubs already looking at Mason. And his uncle is Clive Clark, who used to play for Sunderland. So Clive is very much involved with the agency side of the game. So we'll be very well advised there. And listen, it was a really good performance, Marie. It's going to be interesting to see how we got on against Spain. It is obviously going to be a much stiffer test than Hungary and Wales. But what they've shown in particularly the last two games is that with the limited resources that we have available to these teenagers who are playing in the League of Ireland, they are punching well above their weight.
Yeah, they've been so impressive. And just I saw a tweet a little bit earlier, the last under 17 squad to reach the last eight, to just two players playing at home, a decent squad with Collins, Knight, Ida and Parrott. Brexit means this squad has just two players not playing in Ireland, and that is from Owen Cowser, our own Tony O'Donoghue joins us now. Tony, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm actually delighted that we've got a quarter final to look forward to. It's against Spain on Saturday at 7 p.m. and it's live on RTE.
Oh, it's great to be able to see them as well, Tony. And just from watching them and seeing the development of these players and the fact that there's so many of them are playing in the League of Ireland, it must be quite heartening to see that as well, and to kind of, I suppose maybe it signifies that now we're developing our own players here at home.
I'm not so sure I go completely along with that, because, you know, to many, and to a large extent, it's because of the Brexit situation. I mean, it's not that long ago that a lot of these players would already have been attached to English clubs. I know the onus is on clubs here to develop them as best we can. So, I mean, that is the reality of it. I mean, if it wasn't for that ruling, I'm not so sure that as many of those young players would still be attached to Ireland clubs. But they are now, mm-hmm. and the onus of responsibility is on the Shamrock Rovers and the St. Pat's and all the various other League of Ireland clubs to try and, you know, get academies that will be at least on a par with what they would have got in clubs in England, in particular in the UK, where they've gone to in the past. So we farmed out our development of Irish talent in the past. Now it's time to bring it home.
And Tony, do we know much about Spain? Are they just the typical Spanish team?
Well, I'm not so sure, really. I didn't get to see any of their games. I mean, it'll make for some interesting quarterfinal, that's for sure. And remember, the four semi-finalists qualify for the World Cup. But if we were to be beaten by Spain, well, the two best losing quarter finalists also have a playoff for the FIFA World Cup, and that was to be played in Peru, but it's been taken off Peru. But I mean, it's a great opportunity. You know, it's a great carrot to have, you'd have to say. So Spain first, yeah, and after that, well, you know what? If we beat Spain, it's either England or France. So I mean, this tournament, after starting poorly, let's be honest, with the defeat to Poland the first day, it's taken on wings and a life of its own, you might say. But I would caution as well, I have to say, you know, expecting too much of, you know, under 17s. I mean, if two, three or four of these end up with professional football careers, it'll be a great number. It'll be, you know, it'll buck a trend. I spoke to John Daly, the new St. Pat's permanent manager. He's the one who gave a full senior debut to Mason Mealy at 15 years of age. I heard you earlier talking about under 12s. He's only 3 years older than an under 12.
That's amazing.
And yeah, and you know, he played for St. Pat's. We've seen Evan Ferguson doing the same, but he's a bit of a freak of nature, yeah, in some respects, and a very talented boy. But John was very interesting in what he had to say about the development of our youth talent in this country.
Let's hear from him.
Last night we saw a great performance from the Irish under 17s, and the goals coming from St. Pat's youngsters. Like, you gave Mason Mealy his full debut here. I mean, how important can he be for the future of St. Pat's? How far could he go in the game, and indeed Luke Kerr?
Yeah, very pleasing for the 17s. They obviously had a slow start to the campaign, and they've bounced back with two solid wins, and great for the club to have the goal scorers yesterday. Mason obviously is a key player, and he's one that was on the bench obviously previously on their team, and you know, obviously put him on against Rada when we were trying to go and win the game, and he came on and made an impact. And I think they've, you know, if they keep their feet in the ground and keep working hard as they do, then they've got a great chance of having a good career in the game.
And do you see more of that, young players getting their opportunity earlier than perhaps would have been the case heretofore?
I don't necessarily say it's earlier. I think it's when they're ready. You know, we're more than comfortable to put them in and give them opportunities. I think, you know, young players can get a bit kind of, you know, wanting to get ahead of themselves, and they probably feel they're ready for first team football. But I think one thing that we are is, you know, we will give young players opportunities when the moment is right, and when we feel that they're not going to put them in harm's way.
Best of luck to you for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much, Tony. Thank you.
So Tony, remind us again, when are Ireland playing Spain?
Ireland playing Spain at 7 o'clock next Saturday evening in the quarterfinal of the Under-17s European Championship. It's live on RT, the news channel.
Right, I know we've been cautioned, but still, I'm going to get excited about it. Why not? Tony O'Donoghue, thank you so much for joining us. Paul Corey and Nadine Doherty as well, thank you so much for coming in. That is all we have time for. Betty De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.